And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Graduation senior class, boat from Crystal Lake to New York City. All my friends are floating here, they're all touched from ear to ear. It's out of sight in the dead of night. Here I am in the city with 50 pounds of nuclear waste, and baby, you'd better believe
that's right, kiddies. It's time for another Friday the 13th movie. This time it's part 8, the inaccurately called Jason Takes Manhattan, where Jason doesn't spend an awful lot of time in Manhattan. Anywho, here's the rundown.
Start spreading the news. Yeah, the most obvious thing to come into it with. At least I didn't use it as a music, the most obvious music cue.
No, New York Groove, baby.
Oh, I was thinking New York State of Mind by Billy Joel. Yep. Joel.
Thank God it's not New York State of Mind by what's her name, Rihanna, or, you know, whatever the freak her name is. Does anyone even know that?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Good.
But I listen to a lot of pop Alicia, music, so I've...
Alicia Keys
and Jay-Z. Yeah, yeah, I think that's who it was. Yeah.
The only good version of that is the Star Wars Galactic Empire State of Mind.
Oh, okay. I'll take your word for that.
Be on Facebook after the show looking that up. And I am Chris Honeywell, and I'm here with the other voices you hear. We've got the hair metal hero.
I hope this pen that I got from Stephen King lasts.
We got Sean Engel.
Oh, my head.
Luke Giaconetti.
The Disco Strangler.
I knew everybody was going to be ready with something. And yes, it's back. Friday the 13th, part 8. Was it officially Jason Takes Manhattan?
Takes Manhattan, yes. And the title is probably... More people probably know the subtitle for this one than any other film in the series, I would say. Because everybody knows Jason Takes Manhattan because it's such a just over-the-top title. It's just such a ridiculous title.
Kind of a jumping the shark title?
I'd say the series had long since jumped the shark, but yes, I think that it's one of those ones that just stands out in people's minds.
See, because Jason
filmed
takes
inside the shark's stomach.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't filmed much in New York.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jason Takes Toronto just doesn't have the same ring.
Well, you know, this is one of those cases, and, you know, if anyone who's seen Friday the 13th Part 8 knows, for its about approximately 90-minute running length, about two-thirds of it takes place on a cruise ship.
Jason takes a mid-sized boat.
Yeah, and then the last third of it is in New York. Now, this was not the way that the film was supposed to be originally set up. Writer and director Rob Hedden has said a lot that his original script had it flipped, had the stuff on the boat being relatively quick and then spending the last two-thirds of the film in Manhattan, and he had written scenes for more scenes for Times Square. He had written a scene for Madison Square Garden. He had written a scene for, I think, the Brooklyn Bridge, one for the Empire State Building. But the budget, as we've seen so far...
I was going to say, let me guess.
Yeah, as we've seen continually here in the Friday films, the budget keeps getting cut and cut and cut to the point that I think their budget was something like $6 million to shoot this film. And they told him, you can shoot in New York for 2 days, and that's it.
I counted very few shots in New York City, and you could instantly tell that they were trying to get as much. It's like a nice pan on Times Square and then an encounter in Times Square. And then there was almost really nothing else.
Yeah, the outside
that had to have been shot in New York.
Yeah, outside the train and the MTA.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the train was a set.
Yeah.
But the outside in the train station, the MTA let them shoot there.
There's
a couple other pickup shots here and there. A
lot of alleyway and restaurant sets.
So, you know, it's one of those things where I applaud them for being ambitious, but as we've seen, the budget can come back to haunt you. And this film was kind of doubly cursed because the budget and schedule had already kind of crippled them on the story. But then, for whatever reason, the MPAA really got their panties in a wad over this film versus some of the others in the series, which is why a lot of the kills in this film are as tame as they are. A lot of them were really toned down during editing to avoid getting an X rating. Or what, I don't know if it's X or NC-17 at this point, but to get the R, a lot of the kills had to be toned down, and so that's why we're left with a relatively light blood, so to speak, in the film, which is, you know, it's just kind of a double whammy, unfortunately.
It is not good.
Yeah, it definitely fails compared to the previous films. I know we've seen various degrees of the amount of gore and the amount of violence in the film, and this one, although it does have a couple of really nice kills in it, it does significantly suffer in the gore effects arena. I mean, there's just not much going on.
Yeah, and if you get the Paramount released a special edition DVD, I guess about 4 years ago or so, and that has all of the deleted scenes. They call it slashed scenes. So they have some of the deleted scenes for the kills, but some of them, like the guitar player, when we get the POV shot of her getting smashed in the face, which I actually kind of like that one.
That's one of the ones I like.
Yeah, but there exists an alternate cut, an alternate take of that where it's the other camera shooting and we see her getting smashed in the face. And that no known copy of that footage is known to exist, you know. The scene of the bitchy girl Tamara getting stabbed with the glass. We see Jason breaking the mirror and grabbing the glass and the result of her being stabbed, but there apparently exists an alternate shot where we see him grabbing piece after piece of glass and stabbing her, and then later Kelly who you might remember from The Scorpion King, coming and discovering her body all stabbed and, you know, with like, I think a half a dozen pieces of glass in it. Again, it's you know, if you're going to, you know, cripple the story because you can't afford to shoot it, that's understandable. You know, it's not obviously a good thing, but it's something to be expected. You hope that the stuff they can control would be better, and unfortunately, it's a little tame.
Well, everything that could possibly be appealing about the movie got taken away in some way, whether it be, you know, the person who decided to cut the budget or decided that there could be no gore. So it's a Jason movie with no budget, no gore.
Very minimal, you know, TNA.
Do make note, we do get nudity in the first 5 minutes.
Yes.
That is true, so I will give you that.
And we see a camel billboard and smoking youths immediately, so that might have paid some of the budget right there, I saw. That voiceover at the beginning is one of the crappiest voiceovers ever.
The late night radio.
Yeah,
and you know what's also really funny is that the band, The Darkest Side of the Night, was performed by the band Metropolis, and it's actually I like that song quite a lot. You don't hear quite the whole thing, but if you listen to the whole thing, it's actually a pretty neat little song. They have gone on record that they absolutely despise what happened to their song in this movie with that voiceover and the loop of the little guitar riff. It's like, I don't know what idiot did this, but they ruined a great song.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the one thing I will say that I can give this movie credit. That, you know, if you like sort of 80s pseudo hair metal, no offense, Hero. I mean, this the music for this was acceptable. So, I mean, that's not like high praise.
Cheesy 80s well, catchphrases, you're in luck, well, too.
Yeah.
Man, you're a space cadet. Oh, I hope and he cheese. Doesn't narc on us.
And ready cheese, to party is... and then some.
And cocaine, so...
Coke, oh, yeah.
Coke and coke some and... sort of weird heroin that they shoot up in someone's arm. Yeah, that was
weird hallucinogenic heroin that only makes her weird and fuzzy for a couple minutes and then isn't addressed anymore. I was like, well, this is an interesting twist to the story, but didn't really go anywhere. Like
it was well, pre-Giuliani New York. They had to have that in there.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know what? What's funny is that one of my favorite films of all time is Death Wish. And, you know, in Death Wish, one of the things is that was said at the time was that it reimagines New York as this nightmarish hell. It takes it to the absolute highest degree of where just walking down the street, you're going to get attacked
and mugged. Dystopian, yeah, every
This takes it to a cartoonish new level of hell. And I love that. Being from New York and, you know, that I just love seeing just absolutely ridiculous portrayals of New York like that. And that always brings a smile to my face. It does.
You know what?
It's so inane that you can't help but be amused by it.
You mean to tell me that there are not rivers of toxic waste flowing in New York?
I love that. Every night the sewers of New York
are flooded with toxic waste.
Those rivers of toxic waste, that's how you get the giant alligators. Everybody knows that.
Rivers?
How you make them.
The wibbers.
How you make them giant alligators.
Oh, and the random drums of toxic waste.
Oh yeah,
I will say that is my favorite death in the movie when picks up Charles the asshole who's done nothing right the entire film except screw everybody by making platitudes and stupid announcements that are never the right thing to do and gets drowned in a barrel of toxic waste which is on every street corner in Manhattan
with a dead rat floating on top.
Oh, it's great. I love that.
And of course,
bit.
It's green.
Yeah.
Just like
what else?
The Avenger established the toxic waste is. Okay. Can somebody explain to me how you physically? For one, you would have a cruise ship on Crystal Lake.
Yeah.
And you can cruise it to New York City. And it's like you're cruising the ocean because you have like a perfect storm type weather condition going. If you're on Crystal Lake in it and you get a big windstorm and stuff, you're just gonna rock around a little bit. It's not the ocean.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they're in it didn't make and it, they should have gone full Gonzo weirdness. They sort of tried in some ways, but they should have gone full and not to cross the streams Phantasm weirdness just so you didn't have to wonder how the hell do you take a cruise ship from Crystal Lake to New York City? That just
well, obviously Crystal Lake has an inlet,
right?
And you can take inlet to a river.
A cruise ship wide inlet.
Yeah, and then you take that river out to the ocean. Then you go back into to the harbor where they see Lady Liberty.
Now let's be fair here. This was not like a Carnival cruise ship.
No,
this was perhaps.
This boat is a piece of shit.
It was a cut-rate scow with a skipper who was kind of a prick.
Well, and you know, there's a deleted scene that kind of addresses this, because one of my notes is, you know, oh, all the graduating seniors are going on a cruise. I said, what high school does this?
Yeah.
So there's a deleted scene that addresses that it's Sean's dad, the captain, is giving this as a gift, and this is just his personal ship, apparently.
Oh.
And it's registered out of, like, Venezuela. It's like, why the hell is
Panama,
it in...
yeah.
Panama, yeah.
Panama! But, so, it... Again, it waves its hand at it and at least says, oh, okay, that explains where they got the boat. But it's like, hey, wait, what? Oh, never mind. We're moving on.
And it doesn't help. It's
not even a cruise ship. I'm every time they go into one of these sets in there, I'm like, there's no way that they film this on the boat.
No, it's funny. It's actually two boats. The exterior shots of the Lazarus is one ship. You'll notice they never show the whole thing in one shot to give you the illusion that it's bigger than it is, because it's apparently not a very big ship. But then all of the rooms inside, a few of them are sets, but a lot of them are existing rooms on a second ship and act like we see real briefly the big promenade staircase. Yeah, and anyone who's ever taken a cruise on Norwegian or Royal Caribbean know they always have that big promenade staircase leading down to the promenade deck. And so they have that. They have the disco. And again, any reference to an Eagles song you can fit into a Friday the 13th movie, good on you. You know, the game room, all that stuff was shot on a separate ship that didn't look as creepy and have as much that they could do on the top deck, which is why they used the two different ships.
I just, how big was that friggin' engine room where JJ was playing
it
was, attack?
I know, it was like this, and it was like the Titanic.
But apparently that was one, that wasn't a set. Apparently that was a real, like the electrical and engine room in one of the ships. So, I mean, ships are bigger than you think sometimes.
Well, here's...
Same with the anchor room that what's her name, that Rennie goes to.
Well, here's the thing. You had this ship in New York City, dark alleys and stuff. So, and you had in the bowels of the ship, everything was just too well lit. Jason was too well lit, you know? He was colorful and action figure-y, you know what I mean? They had
it's Kane Hodder. He is the action figure version.
Right,
of
right.
Jason.
And but they have him lit from top to bottom, and it takes some of the
there's nothing
from it.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, we're going on three films in a row.
Oh yeah.
And by this time, there's nothing scary at this point.
At this point, they're not even going ch-ch-ch anymore. They're going,
oh no, they did even more than that in this one. They like saying his whole name.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's so. The first time I heard that, I was like, no, don't do that, no.
But you know that there is some. You know, that's the thing. I mean, there's nothing. This is movies for fans at this point.
Yeah.
One thing I thought that was interesting.
Have to add to the. To everything like,
is one thing that I thought was kind of odd is that being released in 1989, there's elements of this film that seem like they're more belong in a nightmare film than in a Friday film. All the stuff with Rennie's flashbacks and her seeing young Jason drowning, and then the porthole scene, which I think is really neat, and the stuff at the end with Jason drowning in the waste, and we see him as a little kid. That scene was actually extended a little bit originally. There's a deleted scene where we get a close-up of, you know, it's like a giant version of the appliance that Kane Hodder's wearing with the mouth and the teeth and stuff. But there's young Jason in, like, trapped in his teeth and stuff. It's like, this is Nightmare on Elm Street stuff.
Yeah.
This is not what you expect to see in a Friday the 13th film. So
I have to time us out right here. What the fuck is that ending?
That ending is that ending is, like Chris said, she's still on drugs. Notice
that's
only,
the, you know what?
Only just, Rennie, only Rennie reacts to it. Sean doesn't react to it. So I always figured she's hallucinating.
I thought we were going in the direction of she was going to be kind of psychic or maybe even potentially telekinetic like the last movie.
Yeah.
That we were, and that, you know, somehow that psychicness was what was making, because she was seeing Little Jason.
Little Jason, oh no!
That was a great comic strip. She was seeing Little Jason before she got her happy juice shot in New York City, so he seemed to, like, whenever there was a mirror or a window or something, that's when Little Jason could come out. And I noticed Big Jason once saw, you know, the broken window where Little Jason came out, and he sort of angrily smashed away the glass and was like, not in. So I was thinking there was some Little Jason was going to try to get Big Jason, and she might rally Little Jason onto her side and trap him and pull him into the mirror again, Phantasm style.
See, that would
in
be
the
good.
Opposite of Phantasm, the mirror image of Phantasm.
Ooh.
Grown man.
Yeah. But you know, we weren't expecting that in Friday the 13th. Although, you know, good gravy. I forget her name from Seven. They looked into bringing her back, but she was going to require a paycheck of a bit more than they paid her to do part seven. And they balked on that, and they changed the story around a bit. So could have been, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, I guess. But I don't know. I'm partial to this film, and I think we've seen, I'm not the most savage critic. I never have been. If a film it entertains me, especially a film like a Friday the 13th sequel, if it entertains me, that's all I'm really looking for. There's so many little things in this that just amuse me. When he takes the junkie's head and bashes it into the pipe, that just cracks me up, because it's just like bonk in the head.
Yeah. There is some cute stuff in it. I mean, I'm saying cute, but I mean, yeah, there's some fun stuff in it. It's my least favorite of the Paramount distributed ones. But Jason lifting up the mask to scare off people. It's like, he wouldn't do that. He would have fucking murdered all of those people.
Well, there was one point where you could almost see him thinking there, and I was thinking, because I was noticing once he got in New York, it was just, he was just going after the kids. any other kills were incidental. Like, he's going to kill the junkies and bad guys because they're in the way of the kids or whatever. But he went right through a diner full of people. But there was one scene where he was just sort of looking around and tipping his head, and I'm thinking, if I were him, I'd be thinking, look at all these people to kill.
Right.
Yep. Exactly.
And that's something that's what, when we take, say, the name Jason Takes Manhattan, that's what you think. And in fact, the trailer kind of implies that. The trailer, which I absolutely love, which makes it look like it's kind of, a One for the Money or One from the Heart or New York, New York, like a New Wave sort of movie.
Uh-huh.
And then the guy standing pensively looking at New York skyline turns around as Jason Voorhees. And we see just all these random New Yorkers. We see, a yuppie and a homeless guy and everybody just screaming. And it's like New York has a new problem. It's like, oh, it's going to be Jason Voorhees unleashed on New York. And, again, this parts of the story that didn't make it quite to screen was that this was the last class from this high school, the Crystal Lake High School, and so there weren't going to be any more teenagers around the lake, apparently. So that's why he's going after them. But that was, again, dropped. And that sounds kind of like a Nightmare on Elm Street sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, because some of the later Nightmare films dealt with ideas like that about, there's no more teenagers around. I don't have anybody to kill.
Yeah, but every town has an Elm Street.
Every town has an Elm Street.
That was perfect.
I know, thank you. That's my whole life right there, practicing doing Freddy Krueger voice. I do a really good Michael Myers also.
Just as long as your tongue doesn't come through the microphone, that's all I care.
I'm your boyfriend now.
La, 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 la.
I've always had something for the bitches that live in this house. But, we'll get to that movie in a couple of shows.
There's some crossing the streams right there.
One thing you mentioned, the diner scene and Freddy versus Jason, this all ties together. See, it dovetails. There's a method to our madness here on the vault. Who plays the cook that comes around the counter when Jason walks in and Jason throws him into the back mirror? That is played by Ken Kazinger, who would go on to play Jason Voorhees in Freddy vs. Jason.
And that's
an interesting scene, because one of the reasons that Kazinger got the part, or Kazinger, I always say his name wrong, one of the reasons why Mr. Ken got the part as opposed to Kane Hodder for that film was that he's taller, and he was a lot taller than Robert Englund, so that they would look, you would really see the difference in their height on the screen, as I'm showing you with my hands up to the mic. And what's funny is in that scene in Friday the 13th Part 8, you see that Mr. Ken is a couple inches taller than Kane Hodder, even when Hodder's in his full makeup gear. So, again, it seems like a reasonable enough way. Okay, if you want a really tall Jason, this guy seems like a good fit.
So was England, I'm assuming that means England was kind of a tall, lanky type person, and they wanted to have someone who was more imposing. Makes sense.
Yes, yeah. To segue into Kane Hodder's performance, Hodder, they had... Paramount didn't think that he wanted to come back to do Part 8, so they were talking about casting somebody up in Canada. Probably would have been Ken Kazinger, actually. And so Hodder contacted the producers and said, yeah, I love playing this character. I'll gladly do the movie. And they said, oh, shit, well, in that case, we'll get Kane Hodder to do it. They flew him up to Canada, and that was that. I don't think his performance is quite as good as it is in 7, which I think is probably his best one, honestly. But here, he still gets some good, just because I think the material is stronger in 7 as well as in 6. But here, he gets some good stuff to do, and he really seems like he's enjoying himself stalking around, you know?
See, I feel gypped out of my the Jason scene that I expected to see and wanted to see and should be in every New York City movie. And maybe it could have been just in the trailer or whatever, but you have to have a singing bum. And I was totally like, I'm going to see a singing bum in this movie.
Wasn't in the budget.
Sitting down, leaned up against the wall, sweet, with tippling a drink. And then you see, 2 feet clump in front of him and looks up and... Hey, you got a quarter, it just had to happen, and it never happened.
Yeah.
They had the other cliches in there, but where was my singing bum?
Talk about cliches. I love when they're, they're in the subway and they pull the brake and they run out. As soon as we see that third rail, film law dictates that someone is getting thrown into that third rail.
See, and again,
the only way.
Again, that doesn't make any sense because, you know, what was the thing that brought him back to life at the beginning of the film? Him getting electrocuted by, you know, maybe it's just maybe the current on the New York rail system is DC and the current that was running through him initially was AC, which, you know, basically.
But to be fair, Rennie and Sean don't know that. They don't know what's
true. Even Corey Feldman knows. Stab him over and over and over again till he's mush. Mm-hmm. That's all you gotta do to buy yourself some time till the next movie.
Hey, Rennie does a good job starting with that. She stabs him right in the eye with the pen.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I see that and I go, ooh, Halloween reference. Check. Although I do have to admit, that's another bit I do like when Jason smashes through the porthole and grabs Rennie. It's just the way that it's framed and shot is very neat. I like the depth of field, and I like the fact that apparently the actress playing Rennie is Jensen Daggett is really freaked out because there's one of those pieces of glass is pointing like right at her throat.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, well.
I mean, like I said, the movie entertains me. That's all I really ask for. I mean, I love the gag with when they land at the harbor and he sees the big billboard and it's obviously a take on the New York Rangers logo, you know, East Coast Hockey League, and he turns around with the hockey mask. I mean, I like the continuity with the mask. After the mask got blown up in the last film, they introduce a new mask for him to wear, and they remember that his mask is gone. You know, it's little things like that. It doesn't take much, I guess. I think it helps. I think it helps for me that this was one I saw when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I think I actually saw this one probably on USA on TV after I had seen 5 and 7. So again, it's one that I've been watching it for 20 years now, and it's just amusing. You know, it's not a good film, I think, by any stretch of the imagination. And like you say, it's more notable for what it fails to do than what it does. But, you know, taking on its own account, it's an enjoyable evening for me.
I was entertained through it, but not in, you know, a great entertainment way. But I get a lot of entertainment also in anticipation of talking about the foibles of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I was watching it going, ooh, this is a good one right here.
I think we can all agree, though, that I mean, as kind of lame and hamstrung as it is, it does have one of the best deaths in all the movies in it. And I am not talking about the hot rock to the stomach because that was really lame, but we got to talk about
and
Jason.
Not the world's strongest needle that can just punch through a junkie's spinal column.
No. We're talking about JJ. Our token black character wearing one of the sweetest tracksuits ever.
Yep.
Who we've already seen is a pugilist.
Yep.
Means he uses his hands. Sorry, those are Young Guns reference. going mano a mano with Jason. And Jason just sits there and takes everything this kid's got. This kid is
rope-a-dopes him.
Yep. Nonstop. To the point where his knuckles are bashed from hitting him in the face mask many times, and he knows his goose is cooked, and he just says, "Take your best shot," and oh my god, what a shot it is!
Oh man, it's so great. And you know what I love is that we get the shot in there, the decapicam, with the shot of everything spinning around. It's from the POV of the decapitated head.
Oh, that was a piece of brilliance. If I can fault this film for not being one of the better Friday films, I can't fault that one scene because that was just a ridiculously fun kill.
That was like a that's more like it moment in the movie for me.
Well,
if they just filled it with that, I would have been very happy.
I think the ending sequence in the tunnel where Jason, you know, had his mask burned off by the toxic waste, which is obviously flowing around all of New York City sewers, was pretty good special effects. But yeah, I think if we're going to be honest, this is probably one of the most lacking Friday the 13th films, and that's disappointing because We've had some actually really good ones throughout this. You know, for a cut rate, low budget horror film that keeps getting its budget slashed each and every new episode it does, to see it kind of drop to this level was just kind of disappointing when we've had successful ones prior to this.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, watching them all in succession like this, you can see the quality difference between them. And it's clear that this is not as good as the last two, because the last two have been superlative, and this is a pretty steep drop as far as terms of quality and just, you know, just overall, the film in general. But even with that, film still made almost $10 million in profit. And it was the lowest grossing and film of the Friday the 13th films, and was the reason why Paramount kind of canned the series. Even then, still made money. That's the ridiculous thing. As just poor as the film is, and as cheap as it is, and hamstrung as it is, still made money. And that, I think, is kind of the takeaway that we've seen from all these films, that it doesn't, at the end of the day, that's why Paramount, as much as they hated it, stuck with the series, was because it was making them money. And here they finally had to say, it's like, look, it only made $9.7 million. Yeah. That's not enough.
And even though it turned Ebert a profit. Are bitching about it.
Yeah, well, the Leonard Maltin liked it. So take that with a grain of salt. Called it the
bizarre.
Leonard Maltin gave it 2 stars. It was like, what?
Wow.
He also gave, Sean will appreciate this, he gave Laser Blast 2.5 stars, as we all know. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he gave, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom 2.5 stars as well. So, yeah, Laser Blast.
Hey, that is a
good four movie.
Star picture.
Yeah, but no, so Laser Blast and Temple of Doom, roughly equivalent as far as Leonard Maltin.
As far as Leonard Maltin.
Oh,
but, so, you know, but that ultimately, I think, is the legacy of Part 8, is because as a film, yeah, there's some good bits, it's funny, you know, here and there, there's some good kills, you know, we get to see Kane Hodder out there again. But ultimately, it's the film that ends the Paramount run of the Jason Voorhees character and ends the, if you will, Friday the 13th series. Because going forward, the character is sold to New Line, and the next sequel and the succeeding sequels, they're not called Friday the 13th. You know, the character Jason has now, you get the old, you know, oh, let's go rent Jason 1, you know. What movie was that called? I don't remember, you know.
That would be Friday the 13th Part 2.
Oh, I don't know, man. Are you sure? Isn't Friday the 13th the one with Michael Myers in it? No, wait, that was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I'm certain of it.
Stop it, for pimply-faced teenager.
Oh, I dropped the taco in the fryer.
Oh, Jesus.
If I had a girlfriend, she'd kick my ass. But anyway.
That goes without saying.
So it's
speaking of kicking ass. Is it that time? Do we want to do the body count?
Yes, I would like to hear, because I didn't. I'm sorry, I got kind of numb, and I really didn't care about the body count. After
I'm numb. I didn't care about any of the characters' names.
Did you get comfortably numb?
Oh, eventually.
Yes.
May after this.
Right. So we had the pair of lovers on the boat. Which was probably, that was a good throwback to, you know, some old school ones.
One
JJ, the rocker girl, was hot, and she had a sweet guitar.
Yep,
and she actually looked like she could play as well. You know, when she
is a musician.
She did a pretty good job of faking that guitar riff. So,
oh, she wasn't faking anything. That was
much better than the bar in Friday the 13th Part 2.
Oh,
no strings on this.
With no whammy bar.
No whammy. Yes. Yeah, so JJ getting her head bashed in by her own guitar, which was one of the kills I actually liked.
Yep.
The unnamed boxer kid.
Yep, Hot Rock.
Hot Rock's
polka, as we call it.
Oh, that was a Weird Al song.
Yep, and in the original version, he is killed by having darts shoved in his eyes.
Oh.
That's way cooler.
And then we see him stagger down the steps in front of the old weird deckhand guy. That's why we see the darts on the dartboard, was to set that up.
Okay. And then we have probably the biggest bitch ever in any of these movies, more so than the one in Part 5.
Oh, the one who seduced third-rate Martin Landau?
Well, the one who intentionally bumped our heroine off the boat, even when, you know, she knew she was.
Notice there's no rails on the deck of this boat.
No, it was a death trap. The kids should have known then, don't get on the boat. We have the first mate. We have the captain. We have the insanely gorgeous Kelly Hugh. getting strangled in a really wimpy death, but we did have cool teleporting Jason in that scene.
And Disco Strangler reference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had the dorky guy with the camera, who Honeywell probably could have played about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We have the guy who lands on the radar thing, the mast, whatever the hell it is. We have the you're all gonna die deckhand, because we needed to have that character in here. It wouldn't be a Friday without him. We have, let's see, two gangbangers. We have Julius in his sweet tracksuit. We have a random cop that gets pulled into an alley. We have third-rate Martin Landau. We have a random sanitation worker. And if we put in Ken Kurzinga, who was the chef, who we don't see die, but I'm pretty sure he got thrown hard enough into that wall to break his spine, we have a very robust 18.
Ooh, wow.
And, yeah,
wow.
18, good count. And we also, not killed by Jason, but the dorky camera guy shoots the cute deckhand in friendly fire.
Yes.
Yep. And then what the other teacher, the surrogate mom character, gets blowed up after Rennie drives the car into the wall.
All right, so let's put that at 20. We'll put it at 20. 20, not counting all the unnamed students that were on the boat when it sank.
I love that. I love there's that one scene where she's like, you kids all stay here that don't have names.
Yeah, I was going to say, there were like almost a half a dozen other kids that were on the boat that, you know, were in the like disco sequence that we never see again throughout the movie. It's kind of like in the second Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah.
You know, the kids were just there and they just disappear. You know?
Yeah, so 20. We'll put it at 20.
So what's that bring us up to? That's last time it was like 78 or something. You're keeping track of this, Honeywell.
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, put the bong down, would you? For Christ's sake, get on your count here.
Oh, geez, I think I've erased that number off my dry erase board. I thought you guys were keeping track of it. The only numbers I have here are 0169 and 600, and it's neither of those.
All right, fine. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to say, so now the current total kill count is
104.
Insert number here, and I will tally it up, and then you can put it in post.
Yes.
I'm thinking last time it was somewhere around 78, because I know a couple of films ago we got 69.
It's on the last episode, so we'll be able to look it up.
All right, there you go.
All right, add 20 to the Friday show. We'll put it in the show notes.
It's already there in post. By the miracle. So, speaking of budget slashed, is that what happens? What's happening next? I'm not really too clear.
What's happening next?
Oh boy. Well, I can honestly say that the budget was indeed less for the next film, the first Jason Voorhees film released by New Line Cinema. The 1993, the series took off for 4 years, and we returned with Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday.
It's the 90s now, so there you go.
Once again, proving there's no truth in advertising when it comes to horror films.
Set in Seattle.
Yeah, but in one sense, you can look at Jason Takes Manhattan as a sort of last hurrah of the old school. Jason stalks and kills a bunch of nubile teenagers, albeit not in Crystal Lake. I did like that we got him out of Crystal Lake for a little bit. You know, even if it is mostly on the boat. And then on in a little bit in New York. But Jason Goes to Hell turns these series in a hard new direction, gets away from the stuff that we've done before, and tries to graft some more supernatural elements onto it. We will talk about that next time, though. It'll be interesting to see, if you've never seen Jason Goes to Hell, Chris, what you think about this one compared to the very sort of formulaic films that we've gotten so far.
I'm hoping it's like a Hercules, the movie Hercules Goes to Hell.
The one by Mario Bava?
I don't know who made it. I remember seeing it as a little kid, and it was in which Hercules went to hell. I'm hoping it's like that.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. It's in the Italian Pebble.
Yes.
Pebble.
Yeah, well, there's all, you know, all those Hercules movies are like, Pebble. So.
Sort of Steve Reeves and his big, oily, muscular body.
Yeah.
Let's just say this. It's going to be a Herculean task watching the next one.
Oh, great. Mm.
All right. So any final thoughts, anybody, on not only Friday the 13th Part 8, but also the Paramount Friday the 13th series? Anyone?
Pretty awesome up until this one.
You can definitely see the budget just like evaporating away. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, hopefully as that happens, I always hope that they just go crazier and crazier with them. So I'm really counting on Jason Goes to Hell to,
oh, it's crazy.
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hoping
it's pretty wonk-tacular.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that then.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen Jason Goes to Hell. So I'll be interested in revisiting it because it's been, you know, I know the big finale that got everyone excited about this, but we'll have to see how that works out.
Mm-hmm. It's been probably about 6 or 7 years since I've seen Jason Goes to Hell, so interested in rewatching it. I do remember a couple of good sequences from it, so see how it holds up. As far as Part 8, like I said, it's definitely a step down. If you have your choice, watch a different one. You know, 6 or 7, you can't go wrong with. But, you know, if you got a case of your favorite beverage and a couple of your friends over, throwing this in is not going to be a unpleasant evening. That's all I can say about that. It's not not your best choice, but you know what? If you've been drinking a few, you're not going to miss any salient plot points.
That's true.
I was going to say, if you've watched the other 7...
Yeah, you can't
there you
skip
go.
This
one. You can't
you're
skip
in
it.
Now, yeah.
No, you gotta see it. It's a it's Zombie Jason. I like Zombie Jason. I just wish he was in a better movie.
Yep. Don't we all?
Here's crossing our fingers for number 9.
You need to cross your fingers, your toes, your testicles, your ears, your tongue, everything for number 9.
All right, I'm working.
It's not.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, 2 True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the 2 True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at 2TrueFreaks.com. 2 True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email 2TrueFreaks directly at 2TrueFreaks@gmail.com. When you get caught between the moon and New York City, I know it's crazy, but it's true. If you get caught between the moon and New York City,
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about 2 True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of 2 True Freaks. We'll be right back.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."